Welcome to Sullivan & Cromwell's podcast series, S&C Critical Insights. I'm Renata Hesse, a partner in S&C's litigation group and co-head of the antitrust group. This is the last episode in the three-part antitrust series discussing recent developments in merger practice at the antitrust division of the U.S. Department of Justice and at the Federal Trade Commission. In today's episode, we're going to talk about hold separate orders. With me today is Samantha Hines, an associate in our litigation group, who also focuses on antitrust. Good afternoon, Sam.
Good afternoon, Renata. We were last talking about global hold separate orders that prohibit integration until divestitures are completed, which we've seen in two recent transactions handled by Sullivan and Cromwell, Bayer Monsanto and Praxair Linde. Both agencies, the DOJ for Bayer Monsanto and the FTC for Praxair Linde, felt they needed a global hold separate due to the complexity and the breadth of the remedies. Is there any concern that other agencies will take the FTC and DOJ's lead there, and maybe the European Commission or other agencies that are newly developing their antitrust laws and approach to merger review, will they start implementing global hold separates?
So it'll be interesting to watch. I mean, I think both the DOJ and the FTC are leaders in the international field in terms of a merger enforcement and merger practice generally. They lead the discussions often along with the European Commission and some of the other agencies at places like the International Competition Network and an OECD. And so I think there is a chance that other agencies will follow. I think one thing we have seen in the international landscape is that it used to be that, you know, countries would sort of clear when they were done. So if you had 20 clearances and maybe a smaller jurisdiction finished first, they would finish and they would clear the transaction. I think what we're seeing now more is that because of the increased cooperation and coordination that's going on between all of the agencies, everyone is kind of waiting until the end and is waiting until the larger jurisdictions like the US and Europe are finished before they clear. And so this ability to go through and kind of clear jurisdictions one by one by one as you go through the process seems to be diminishing. And so you're ending up with a situation where, I mean, you might have some of them clearing 10 days before the end and the rest of them clearing at the same time, but it's all happening much later in the process than my experience in the past.
Do you think hold separate orders are likely to become more common tools for courts to use? I know the antitrust bar has been curiously watching Judge Leon's review of the CVS Aetna merger, and he's been talking about potentially implementing a halt on integration in that merger.
Yes, that's been a fascinating process to watch. A really unusual hearing occurred where Judge Leon took the DOJ to task for permitting integration of the parties to continue before he had actually, you know, approved the consent decree and before completion of the Tunney Act process. So just to, you know, level set, in October, DOJ said that it would require CVS and Aetna to resolve the overlap between their Medicare Part D plans in order to approve their roughly $70 billion deal. And to satisfy these concerns, Aetna had sold its Medicare Part D business to WellCare Health Plans. So an upfront buyer and a divestiture that DOJ was, at least DOJ seemed to be in line with thinking, resolved the concerns that they had about the transaction. So under the Tunney Act, the DOJ consent decrees in civil antitrust cases are subject to a 60-day public comment period, and then they must be reviewed by a federal court that must determine whether the entry of the consent decree is in the public interest. So this Tunney Act is a legacy of a time where there was President Nixon actually interfered with the division's resolution of a particular antitrust case. And the Tunney Act was designed to give the public an insight into how the division had resolved the antitrust case and to give the public input to make sure that not only was there sunshine on what DOJ was doing, but to the extent that considerations that the public had about whether the decree should be approved were brought to the court's attention. So court reviews almost always approve DOJ's consent decrees, and the merging parties typically close their transaction before the court enters a decree. This is fairly common. There are on occasion contested Tunney Act proceedings where courts really drill down and look at merger reviews. And even in the case of the Microsoft case, for example, it was done in a non-merger transaction. But typically, this is not a controversial part of the transaction. Usually, the hardest part is getting the court to act on the order approving the consent decree in a timely way. So this process was followed, and Aetna, CVS, and Aetna closed their transaction, and Aetna sold its Medicare Part D business, and the parties were planning to begin integration. And then they went for a hearing with Judge Leon in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia. And in the hearing, which it's a fascinating read if you can get a copy of the transcript, Judge Leon floated the idea that CVS and Aetna must keep their companies separate until he can determine whether the agreement that the Justice Department struck with the companies clears any competitive concerns. He seemed very upset by the idea that even though he had not yet completed his review and ruled on the legality of the transaction and the settlement of the transaction, that the integration and closing had already occurred. So Judge Leon ordered DOJ and the parties to submit arguments as to why he should not halt their integration pending his final ruling, and he scheduled a hearing on the topic for next week. So it'll be interesting to see how that all comes out. So Sam, let's shifting gears a little bit off of the merger process side to information sharing. I know that when we talk to clients during merger reviews, some of the most common questions, at least during both the due diligence phase and then the integration planning phase once the merger agreement has been signed, the most common questions are around what to do with information, what they can and cannot exchange during due diligence or while planning for post-closing integration. What's the latest on how the agencies are looking at information sharing issues, and what kind of advice do you give to clients on these issues?
So I'll start by giving a bit of background on what the concern is here. Pre-merger information exchanges between competitors are subject to scrutiny under Section 1 of the Sherman Act, which prohibits contracts, combinations, and conspiracies that unreasonably restrain trade. Where a proposed transaction is also subject to a reporting obligation under the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act, that pre-merger information exchange may also be viewed as a violation of Section 7A of the Clayton Act if the agencies decide that, in their view, that exchange of information had the effect of jumping the gun or shifting the beneficial ownership or operational control of the target business into the hands of the acquirer before they have concluded their review underneath the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act. Regulators recognize that parties that are merging and engaging in due diligence and pre-closing integration planning often have a need to exchange competitively sensitive information, but require that the parties have a good business justification for doing so and require certain safeguards, such as using a clean team agreement to ensure that that information is retained for the purpose of due diligence and integration planning and does not find its way into the parties' efforts to compete in the marketplace. So broadly stated, what are the types of competitively sensitive information we're concerned about? It's proprietary information that a party would not be sharing with a competitor but for the potential transaction, such as current and future pricing information, strategic plans, and detailed costs. So the rule of thumb I always tell my clients is if you would be uncomfortable that your competitor has this information, that's the type of information that you want to be careful about sharing during due diligence or integration planning. So your question was, what are the agency's current thinking on this? Because often our clients say, well, I hear information exchange challenges are rare, and so is this something I really need to be concerned about? Clients really do need to be concerned about it because it is a focus of the Federal Trade Commission and the DOJ. The FTC in March released a blog post reminding merging parties of the risks of information sharing and providing guidance on how to set up a process to monitor the flow of information during due diligence and integration planning to minimize any risk that that information is misused. The DOJ is also focused on this. They very recently settled a case with 6 broadcast television companies for an unlawful information sharing exchange. While the information that was exchanged wasn't done for the purpose of merger integration or due diligence, it was discovered during a merger clearance case when the DOJ was reviewing documents in connection with Sinclair Group's abandoned acquisition of the Tribune Media Company. So both agencies are focused on it. The DOJ in particular is focused on employee information. So they're concerned about competition for talent in a lot of different markets. And so companies also need to be careful about sharing detailed cost and wage and bonus information because their competitors could use that information to undermine competition for that talent in the workforce.
And it seemed like the antitrust division was also concerned, if I remember the announcement correctly, and this was done when I was still at the antitrust division, that they were concerned about actual collusion amongst companies on issues like employee wages and bonuses and things like that. Is that a real risk, criminal prosecution for exchanging this kind of information?
Yes, Renata, that's a real risk that companies need to be concerned about. So these are the so-called no-poach agreements between companies, often in the tech industry and other industries as well, where the division has said that they're going to be looking closely at these types of agreements and will go after those criminally.
So, Sam, this all sounds fairly tricky, avoiding running afoul of either Section 1 of the Sherman Act or Section 7A of the Clayton Act. How can companies avoid running into problems during the diligence phase or the integration planning phase of a merger?
The best way to avoid the appearance or actual misuse of competitively sensitive information is to have a good process in place to monitor and control the flow of information between the parties. If competitively sensitive information must be exchanged for due diligence or integration planning purposes, the parties should do so through a clean team that's made up of third-party consultants or personnel at the parties that are not responsible for competitive planning, pricing, or strategy. Those people can then review the information, summarize the information in a way that can be shared with a broader team at their companies and used for due diligence or integration processes. And the exchange of any competitively sensitive information should also be cleared with antitrust counsel. We can help you assess whether or not the information that you're hoping to exchange is sufficiently narrowly tailored or reasonably related to a diligence or an integration purpose. And if it's not, we can suggest ways to aggregate or narrowly tailor that information in a way that allows our clients to meet their due diligence or integration planning needs, while also minimizing the risk that information, if it wound up in the wrong hands, could be used to undermine competition.
Right. The way I always think about this is the goal is to get the business the information that they need in whatever form we're able to do it so they can make decisions during the merger review process or during the diligence process, but also keep them safe from running into trouble with either the FTC or DOJ.
That's absolutely right.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to SNC Critical Insights and the Antitrust Series. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.solcrom.com.